This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, we are back here on Sharp Money, starting our third and final hour. Jared Smith, Dustin Sweetelson, and now joining us in person. I always love when I get to talk to this gentleman in person. He is Adam Burke, of course, managing editor here at VSiN.com. Does a fantastic job. All things website related, all things baseball related. Follow him on X at Skating Tripods. Adam, let's just start kind of where we left off the last topic, which was Garrett Crochet. We think it's going to be his last start, if not second to last start. I thought it was very intriguing that the books did not list his outs prop tonight after what happened before the break. They learned their lesson. I saw a 15.5 and in a faraway land, but not much here at the big box shops onshore. And I'm not going to lie. I don't blame him because it seems like he could be pulled at any moment.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that's really difficult about Garrett Crochet is, I mean, what is he worth in a trade, right? I mean, this is a guy who's starting for the first time at the big league level, a guy that kind of profiles as somebody who is likelier to have arm injuries than other guys. So to me, I think it's one of those things. I don't really know what his trade market is going to be. Maybe you pair Luis Robert with him and get a really, really big return. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's a tough thing about, you know, betting on sports right now, betting on baseball specifically is, like you said, I mean, guys may get pulled at any time. You're on hug watch for the next week. So, you know, I think it's tough to kind of invest in Crochet. That being said, Dustin, maybe you can answer this better than I can. What the hell is wrong with the Texas offense? What has been the problem with this group all year long?
They're about to be sellers.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
They're about to, the defending champs who brought everyone back. And we've seen this happen before. It is so hard to go back-to-back in baseball because the season's so long, relying on pitching. Those guys then throw more innings they've never thrown before. It was a perfect parallel to Crochet, Adam. I made a point before you came on here when you were sitting over at the bar that you would have an answer for this. But Crochet being dangled out there in the market and Chicago playing this game where they're going to try and limit his innings, don't we need to factor in, if we're a team trying to add Garrett Crochet, the ramp-up period to start, all the work and all the throws that you have to make and pitches you have to make to get ready to make a start? Just because the game results say 2-3 innings doesn't mean this guy didn't go through so much to get there. Doesn't that diminish his value as well, even though Chicago will try to say, look, we're trying to sell you this car with 100,000 miles on it, but they're highway miles, guys.
They're highway miles.
Yeah, I mean, look, he 12 2/3 last year, missed all of 2022, 54 1/3 in 2021, and he's made 20 starts this year already. So, you know, I mean, this is not a guy that I would expect to be a, you know, full-time contributor for you in the second half. Look, teams don't do this. I wish teams did this. If I'm being a fan of a small market team, if I'm a small market team, I 100% do this. I'm piggybacking guys. I'm getting four innings out of two guys. That's my goal. That's my hope. That's what I'm trying to achieve. Garrett Crochet fits perfectly into that kind of mold. Yeah. If you find a team willing to do that and kind of cobble together, Frankenstein together, a number three starter.
Well, what about this? Jared brought up the potential of adding him as a reliever because he can be now a multi-inning reliever. We think of Andrew Miller.
Phil Hughes, how valuable he was with the Yankees when they won the World Series.
David Price as a rookie, right, with Tampa Bay, being electric out of that pen, giving them a couple innings. To me, if you're trading for Crochet, that's more of the mold you're looking for. And now you've shortened games. You've made things easier for a pitcher who could only go five innings. Now the bridge is Garrett Crochet, two innings into the setup man, into the closer. Now we're cooking with something.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense, particularly for this year. Like, go ahead and limit him to, we'll say conservatively, 140 innings, something like that. Make him a reliever for a contender, a team that has a shaky bullpen. And look, I mean, with the exception of the Guardians, every team in the playoff race could use bullpen help. Every single one of them. And then you run them out there next year as a starter.
Yes.
You know, that's 100% what I would do if I was a team. Either doing the tandem piggyback thing that I mentioned, looking to get three or four innings out of him, or use him as a multi-inning reliever, as a fireman in that Andrew Miller role. And by the way, Andrew Miller was pretty damn good in that role in 2016 for Cleveland.
And is this going to be a trend going forward? Are there going to be teams out there who know they're not contending, they have an electric reliever? Are they going to follow this mold that Chicago, there was no indications Garrett Crochet was going to be a major league starter. They took a chance that the electric stuff would play out over four or five innings versus the one or two you get as a reliever. Are we going to see other teams try to rebuild that way, seeing if they can find the similar lightning in a bottle that Chicago did?
I think it's possible, especially when you consider that, you know, a lot of the fireball relief types of guys were actually starters in college. Garrett Crochet was a starter in college. Yep. So you at least know going in that he has the capability of being able to do it. Also, I mean, he's 6'6", 230. It's not like he's a small guy.
He's a little different.
You know, he's a big boy. So, you know, he's a guy that you would think would be able to handle that type of workload. But, look, we see it all the time where teams take failed starters and make them relievers. And some guys have success, some guys don't. I would take dominant relievers and see if they could be a five-inning starter for you. Nobody does it
Jordan
in reverse, what you're talking about. Look,
he's having issues lately.
He hasn't had a good year. Hard hit rates up, fly ball rates up, but that's an example.
But he got off to a great start.
He got off to a great start, and then he kind of ran out of gas. Yeah. And I think a lot of guys did run out of gas going into the All-Star break. Guys that, you know, had really good April and May and then kind of tailed off a little bit over the last 6 weeks of the first half because it's hard. It's a very, very heavy workload. But I think it is something that you could do. And I also think that, you know, six-man rotations are going to be more of a thing going forward as well. Also, there are a lot of fifth starters in the league that aren't very good. If you can cobble together two above-average arms into one starter and get three innings out of each, something like that, I would absolutely do that. The reason why it hasn't happened to this point is because if you get branded as an organization that suppresses player salaries, it's very difficult to come back from that. But relievers get paid very handsomely nowadays, as they should. So I really hope the dynamics of baseball, you know, roster management start to change in that regard. And maybe Crochet can be a guy that can be something of a trailblazer as a result.
Yeah, the gap's closing there for sure. Starter, reliever, salary. It's still a pretty big gap. It's kind of like the difference between maybe receiver and running back in the NFL right now, although maybe running backs make more than some of the relievers do still just because of the way the NFL is. It was obvious that the pitchers needed the break because the first 4 days since the All-Star break, the Nerfy's 40-17. And I don't think that's as much lineups as it is you give these ace-type pitchers 10 days off after having 5 days off, and you see that first start back, they look like they're just refreshed. I think gradually we'll continue to see that drop off. But early on, you're seeing the electricity certainly in these arms. And we get a guy tonight, Paul Skenes, who's been arguably the most electric arm in baseball the first half of the year. I don't think I'm at the point now where my opinions change. I've kind of been educated a little bit with the Pirates organization. I don't think they're going to shut this kid down. I think they're too close to the wild card, barring some kind of major collapse. And I think because of he hasn't had as much tread on the tires, he has a unique upbringing, you know, didn't play or wasn't a pitcher right away. He was a catcher. He was basically flying fighter pilots a few years ago. He's the exception to the rule here. And I think the Pirates really push him. They've been willing to give him 7 innings per start. He kind of feels like a guy that you can continue to bet the overs on and even maybe Cy Young market if he can get up to that 130, 140 innings threshold.
Well, you know, I was under the impression that the Pirates would end up sitting Paul Skenes
down.
He would get to a certain point and they would say, you know what, we're not going to put this guy at risk. Here's the thing, though, and this isn't talked about enough, and people rail against the analytics community and all this. It's not the analytics community saying that 100 pitches is the threshold. Like, it's not us saying that. The third time through the order penalty is absolutely out there. It's very, very true. Yep. But when you look at Paul Skenes, of those 66 and a third innings, of all the pitches he's thrown, however many it's been, over 1,000, 1,072, how many of those are high stress? How many of those are with men in scoring position? How many of those are in the fifth inning, you walk the first two guys, and then all of a sudden you're out there fighting for your life? It's not happening. There's a really, really big difference between throwing a dominant 100 pitches over 7 innings and battling through 100 pitches in 4 2/3, something like that. So for Skenes, you have to look at the stress level of the pitches because not every pitch is created equal. And this is something that the Guardians, for example, have embraced with their bullpen. Their bullpen has an extremely high workload, but it's not an extremely stressful workload because they're out there, you know, they work a lot, but they're throwing 12-pitch innings and they're not having anybody get on base, stuff like that. So I think teams are starting to realize the difference here. And for Cleveland, that's something that's been talked about where they'll say, well, they're keeping track of my pitch count, but also like the leverage and the stress of the pitches. Pittsburgh is probably doing the same thing with Paul Skenes to where they're going, you know what? We had a number in mind. If we go past it, that's okay because he's throwing 100 free and easy in the sixth inning. He's giving up one hit and no runs. So that's the difference where I do think now the number that they had in mind has absolutely changed and may not even exist anymore.
Okay, maybe I have PTSD because I came up on Generation K and then the Matt Harvey, Noah Syndergaard.
You're a Mets fan. You definitely have PTSD.
So I look at Pittsburgh and I go, no, I felt that way at one point as well, too. I said, no, our guys are built different. They're going to withstand this. And what I'd say is, now, while 2015 still makes me emotional in the run of the World Series, there's very clear attacks the Mets and those pitchers had to pay with their careers and their wallets, frankly, post having those guys throw more innings than they were really ready to do too early. Skeens does feel like he's built different, but it does feel like Matt Harvey, it does feel like Noah Syndergaard were also guys that were built different as well.
Everybody's built different until they're not, right?
Yeah.
You know, and also, I mean, look, we take for granted the major arm injuries, the Tommy Johns, the brace surgery, stuff like that, because guys are coming back and are, you know, they have their velocity back, they have their command back. It's just, it's a procedure that has, I don't want to say been perfected because it hasn't been, but it's as close to perfect as you can possibly get something in the medical realm. And so we kind of just take it for granted. And I think to some degree, teams kind of take it for granted too. And they're just going to pay guys anyway, because they're going to be like, well, if we want to get guys that don't have any arm trouble, we're not going to get anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing I think for Pittsburgh is, I think they learned, right? Tyler Glasnow was hurt all the time for them. Like, Jameson Taillon was hurt all the time for them. Now, he also had the testicular cancer thing, which, you know, not an arm injury, obviously, but, you know, all of their prospects kind of got caught up in something. They probably learned from that. I think an organization like Detroit maybe is starting to learn from all the guys that had injuries in Tommy John and things of that sort. So I think organizations are just finding better ways to navigate, you know, the ramp up process, and then also, you know, what they do post surgery.
Something that's hard to quantify sometimes is the depth and knowledge of your scouting and training departments and how well they get these guys up to speed. That is certainly part of the equation. Want to stick around for another segment?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we're doing another segment. We got to get to his best bets of the day. Adam Burke, more with him on the other side. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, guess what? VSiN NFL betting guide's out now. I'm sitting next to the father of said betting guide, Adam Burke. He's got the college football guide dropping August 1st. I'm the father of the first innings. Adam Burke's the father of the NFL betting guide. And for only a small price of $175, you can get that early bird rate and get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl. You get everything, all the trimmings, advanced stats, trends, power ratings, plus, of course, full access to the site with betting splits and exclusive data. The football special discount runs through the end of this month. Don't wait. VSiN.com/subscribe. Sign up today. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. And we are back here with Adam Burke, VSiN managing editor. I am trying to figure out a college football win total to give you for the college football guide. I'm still in the marination phase.
When's that Dubai? For people that don't know, Burke has to be like a teacher.
Yeah.
And he has to lay the law down to everyone who works at VSiN. He then has to follow up and be like, hey, guys, I know the deadline's 10 days from now, but you can send it early. It would really help me out. And then we all wait until the day of. And he's like, do you guys have anything? And everyone's like, yeah, I'll get to writing it. And then he has to cram and put it away. It'd really be good when we talk about, like, baking into a number when it comes to betting. If you now would come to us to be like, I need it by the 29th, but really you don't need it until like the 2nd.
I used to have a girl I used to date that I used to tell her 30 minutes before I needed her, and it worked. It solved all of our problems.
Well, I mean, again, the college football betting guide comes out August 1st. So if I tell you guys July 29th, to me, I feel like that's far enough in advance. But yeah, you know, it's...
You've proven you can dance. That's the problem, right?
Once you're too talented to need that much of a buffer.
Yeah, once we know we can take advantage and work, like, that's what we do here. We're people who work in between the lines. We fill in the cracks.
So I caught up with Stormy today, who... told me, who showed me, that there's a reminder in her calendar for tomorrow to send me something for the college football betting guide, even though it's not due till July 29th.
So Stormy's a good employee.
One of the many reasons why Stormy is my favorite person.
She's
here.
She's a good egg.
But maybe you should take a page from that, Dustin, and...
To be fair,
calendar reminder.
He's been having computer problems all day. Look, you could see based off his laptop that is not the normal stickers.
I mean,
it looks
to me like it works.
It does work.
It's a Mac.
I think it's a functionality thing, not necessarily a hardware thing.
Operator error.
First of all, it's an efficiency
problem.
For you to think that I could do things that Stormy Bond and Tony can do is a wild concept.
She's pretty talented.
And like intelligence and professionalism.
Yeah.
She is my polar opposite.
She makes you look like Krusty the Clown.
She makes me look like Shrek. What are we talking about?
All right. Speaking of Krusty the Clown.
July 29th.
There you go.
For anybody else who's listening who works here at VSiN, July 29th.
Okay. So I'm excited because I have started breaking
teams down.
Nobody
who works here watches our shows. Come on. Let's be honest.
I have started I'm 17 teams deep in my breakdown. I have not gotten to the ACC yet because I'm a Miami fan. And I have very high hopes for what they've done despite Mario Cristobal being the head coach of this team. It'd be hard. There's been a lot of big transfers this year, but it's hard to quantify the upgrades this organization made with Cam Ward at quarterback and Damian Martinez at running back. Plus, when you factor in what Cristobal is building and recruiting on that offensive line, you look at the ACC here, Adam. What jumps out to you immediately?
Yeah, I think Miami is a really, really interesting team. I mean, you know, the thing that doesn't get talked about enough with the Hurricanes last year, they were 103rd in yards per play defensively 2 years ago. They were 30th last year. I think Lance Guidry is a really, really good defensive coordinator. I like the talent that they brought in on both sides of the ball, specifically Ward and Martinez on offense. And remember, when you improve your offense, you also improve your defense more often than not. And Ward is going to be the best quarterback this program has had in a while. You know, the thing that was interesting when I was, you know, doing some research for the guide here, he actually played in a wing T offense in high school, which is why he was not recruited at all coming out. Now he's in his fifth season of college football, almost 14,000 passing yards, very experienced guy, probably still getting better as a player.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens with him, you know, in terms of the NFL draft. But I have the Hurricanes favored in 11 games, Dustin. So I like over nine on their win total.
I think 4-1 to win the league is a good number. Look,
so, you know what? I like that too. So here's the thing. I don't know that DJ Uiagalelei, who's now at Florida State, is going to be a guy at Florida State.
Thank you. Someone else is in the camp with me.
I think you
have to say his name, though.
DJ Uiagalelei, key on the L's there. Emphasize the L's because that's what he
does.
You're
not allowed to hate on him until you say his name.
Look, I think Jonathan Smith had a lot to do with that.
Yep.
Jonathan Smith is now in East Lansing. Jonathan Smith is not at Florida State. And while I do think Mike Norvell is one hell of a head coach, and he's done a great job there in Tallahassee, there's a lot of lost production here for this team at the skill positions. And you're also breaking in a new quarterback. I think defensively they could fall off a little bit here as well. I will say my projection for them is actually 9.52 wins. So it's right on the win total number of 9.5. I lean more towards 10-2 than 9-3, but I could see Florida State maybe being a little bit of a disappointment this season.
And I was high on them a year ago. But here's the thing about Florida State. Mike Norvell spent this entire offseason continuing to complain about how things ended a year ago. You can't tell me that's not a distraction for the team that's there now. A lot of those guys not involved in that, right? Weren't starters. Some of the others transferred in. Yet he's still chirping about missing the playoffs a year ago. That hangs over the organization. Attitude reflects leadership, captain, from Remember the Titans. It's a true thing.
Great line.
If that's the way the leader's acting, it's going to trickle down. And then Clemson's not even playing the same game as everyone else in 2024. They don't care about transfers. They're sticking with Cade Klubnik. Miami, despite Mario Cristobal and the way things went in that Georgia Tech loss a year ago, where he absolutely blew a big moment for this team, I think at 4-1, it will be one of many bets I have in pocket in college football.
How about to miss the playoff? You're laying $1.80 there for Florida State.
Yeah, look,
I know I don't like laying futures, but if we're that certain that they're going to be this bad, ACC's getting one team, right?
Here's the problem that I have with that, though, is we know whether it's college basketball or college football, they can manipulate whatever they want to put whoever they want in the tournament, in the playoffs, stuff like that. If Florida State is on the bubble to be one of those 12 teams,
they get the sympathy vote this year.
They are going to get the benefit of the doubt because of what the committee did to them last year. But I will say, you know, to Dustin's point, I mean, Miami, look, when you think about some of these teams, like Miami's never really going to be a top four team, right?
No.
Can they be a top 12 team?
Yes.
Absolutely. You think about these group of five teams now. I mean, Liberty is the one that has the highest win total and the team that's most likely to be the group of five representative in the playoff here. But you want a team like Memphis or a team like Tulane, and this is, you know, on the tip of my tongue because I'm writing up the AAC as well. Like, now all of a sudden, those are teams, they'll never be top four. Never be top four. Never be close to top four. But top 12, get that group of five bid, those teams all of a sudden are very, very highly motivated now, because it's not just about winning a conference championship. It's about winning a conference championship and going to the playoff. So the playoff really changes a lot of dynamics here, I think, where you're going to get a three-loss team that makes it. I think that's almost a certainty.
I think you might get two.
You may get two, exactly, especially if they come out of the SEC.
100%.
So you have these teams where, you know, for Miami, it's like, well, you know, they always lose that game that they shouldn't, right? There's always a game they lose.
Take a knee, Cristobal.
Well, but they have margin for error now.
What I'd say when I look at Miami, the weakness remains, it's the secondary. The secondary has to play better. They brought in some reinforcements. There's still a lot of question marks there. They lost production there as well. That is a massive spot for them. However, if they can get a push up front, that always makes your DBs better because they don't have to cover as long.
Mm.
I will say one team that I think the market is a little bit higher on than I am, I'm not a big Louisville backer.
Well, they embrace transfer culture first.
Sure. I mean, as they should.
And they did it again. Should. And they went hard again this year.
They did. They went hard again. But I'm not a Tyler Shuck guy. I don't really think that. And look, I mean, Jeff Brohm is a really, really good head coach. And obviously he has the pulse of a quarterback. He's a quarterback whisperer type of guy. But Jack Plummer followed him to Louisville. Now he's getting a full-fledged transfer guy in Shuck, who's been at two different programs already here, Oregon and Texas Tech. And while I love Colin Lacey, and I think he could be a first-round draft pick here in the NFL coming out of South Alabama now at Louisville, the defense will be good, but this is a team that was 21st in the nation in rushing yards last year, and they lost two guys in Jordan and Garendo who combined for almost 2,000. So I think Louisville is not going to be balanced this year. What hurt the Purdue-Brohm teams? They weren't balanced at all on offense. I think Louisville could be an underachiever here. I like them under 8.5 wins. I have 7.84 as my projection.
They lost Jamari Thrash as well. A team in this game by game, maybe not to win the league, Adam, want to get your thoughts on because you wrote them up. And I want to back them week one against Florida State. I want to take the points in Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech's really interesting to me. I mean, Haynes King did a really, really good job last
year.
He was extremely good, kind of lived up to that, you know, that recruiting billing going to Texas A&M. And here's the thing. When you're a team like Georgia Tech, right, you're probably going to finish in the middle of the ACC if you're good enough to do that. You're going to scratch and claw for bowl eligibility. Their season win total is 5 out there at DraftKings. But you know what? They weren't ravaged by the transfer portal.
Mm.
They kept most of their returning production. And at a school like Georgia Tech, I think that's difficult to do. So obviously, you know, Brent Key has his finger on the pulse of this team. And I kind of give teams like that a little bit of the benefit of the doubt going into the season. If they're a middling, mediocre team and they kept everybody, the culture at that program is really strong, and I think that's a big positive.
Adam Burke, Visa Managing Editor's Best Bets article for baseball is up right now. Cubs first 5 run line.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's been a rough baseball year.
Yeah, ups and downs. We'll be back with Bob Nightingale on the other side. More baseball here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Stop what you're doing right now and go to VSIN.com. Why? We've got best bets. I just gave you one of them before the break. It's Adam Burke's MLB best bets article for tonight. He's on the Cubs laying a half run in the first 5 innings. You're getting plus money there. Colin Ray going up against Jameson Taillon. I love the matchup. Plenty more matchups for you to dissect. All you have to do is go to VSIN.com and check it out. Final 30 minutes of Sharp Money coming to you right now, hot and heavy, live from downtown Las Vegas. Jared Smith in for Patrick Maher today and tomorrow. Dustin Sweetelson always here and grinding on a Tuesday. And we welcome in our next guest. We are excited to talk to this gentleman. Of course, he joins us via the Progressive Guest Line, USA Today, MLB columnist and insider, Bob Nightingale. Follow him on X at B Nightingale. And Bob, we're into that time of the year where we've got about a week left before the non-waiver baseball trade deadline. It is an exciting time, or not an exciting time if you're a pitcher about to get moved. One of those pitchers probably on the mound tonight, Garrett Crochet. So two questions. One, is he going to get traded? B, is he going to be a starter or a reliever when he finally reaches his next destination?
Yeah, the second question is a lot tougher. I think he'll be a starter for a little bit, but then he's got to be a reliever. He's already pitched more innings than his entire career combined. You know, the White Sox already have a plan with him. They've agreed to as far as limiting his innings. If he stayed, obviously not staying. But, yeah, he'll definitely be traded. They're not hanging on to him, and probably he'll go down to the wire. We'll see if he goes you know, Orioles, Dodgers, Yankees, you know, all those teams were in on him.
So, Bob, a key here in this market is teams have to become sellers, right? They have to declare their season is over. How much has it been a wrinkle in that market developing when you look at the National League wild card? And we have six teams within a game for a wild card spot here. We have a lot of teams in the mix. Bad teams who would normally not be in contention for the postseason all of a sudden could be postseason bound. How difficult has it been for this market to fully develop because of that fact?
Yeah, this is one of the strangest markets I've seen. And because, I mean, obviously they added the extra wild card team. It makes it metal. So, you know, all these teams, I think only five teams are really out of the race. And so everybody's going to be kind of staying pat or slightly going for it. It's a great seller's market. So teams like the White Sox should, you know, clean up along with Washington and the Marlins. I think it'd be a duller trade deadline than people think. A lot of activity. But, you know, is there really anybody that's going to make an impact? You know, the only guy I think make an impact would be, you know, Tarik Skubal of Detroit. And I just can't see them moving them. I really can't.
Yeah, and you kind of read my mind here, Bob. That was my next question. I was going to give you the yay or nay, Tarik Skubal and Max Scherzer. Which one more likely to get traded? I think your answer on Skubal makes a ton of sense. So let's move on to Scherzer. That's another guy that the Rangers are in that weird spot where there's so much pedigree and so much excitement coming into the year. The defending champs, they've fallen flat on their face. Scherzer, among other guys, cheap contract situation with the free agency looming, is that something you could see Max maybe getting moved in the next week or so?
I mean, he has a full no trade clause, so he can dictate where he wants to go, if anywhere. But the fact they're only, you know, four games back now, and, you know, I mean, Seattle's been falling apart. You know, Houston's, you know, they're still vulnerable. I think they go for it. I think they don't move anybody and take their chances the last third of the season here.
The Baltimore Orioles, Bob, the very young team, ahead of schedule. They obviously had Burns in the offseason to give them an ace, but they lost a bunch of key starters to injury. How aggressive do you expect this new ownership group to be here with that window, wanting to capitalize, get off to a good start? Do you expect them to be the most aggressive team at the trade deadline?
I don't. I feel it's going to be the Yankees and Dodgers as far as the most aggressive. Maybe the Dodgers. The Orioles made the playoffs last year. Hey, going to the World Series or winning it would be great, but it's not like their season's a failure if they don't. So I think they'd love to get their hands on a Crochet or Skubal or something like that because they don't have really any pitching, you know, locked up for next year. So, and Corbin Burns is a free agent. So, you know, money's not a problem, and they got one of the lowest payrolls in baseball. Tennis is up by 30%. But there's not much out there. I think they got to get another back-end reliever for sure. I'm not sure they want to count on Craig Kimbrel to be the closer.
Yeah, I think Baltimore is going to be very aggressive. I agree with you on the Dodgers, too. The Yankees are an interesting team. Bob, I mean, I think they have enough on IL that could basically field a small city with all the players that we hope are coming back for them healthy, perhaps Rizzo, Stanton, just to name a couple. But pitching wise, I'm not too high on Cortez. I'm not too high on Rodon. I think Luis Hill's pitched a ton of innings for a rookie, and I don't see him being a high impact, high volume pitcher down the stretch. They need to save something for October. The Yankees absolutely are going to get more from Gerrit Cole than they got in the first half, which was nothing. But it still feels like they need at least one more starter to this rotation to feel comfortable heading down the stretch.
Yeah, and I'm not sure there's a starter out there. I think they're going to try to go with what they have rotation-wise, but they got to get that bullpen ready. You know, they've struggled down the stretch here. You know, the closer has Clay Holmes has, you know, struggled the last few appearances, blown some saves. So they need another corner infielder too, either at first base or third base. So I think they go that route, get a corner infielder and another late inning reliever.
Can you remember a team, Bob, in a situation like the Atlanta Braves are in right now, where Max Fried's now hit the IL, they lost Strider for the year, they've just piled up the injuries with Acuna and Albies, but they're still leading the way in the wild card race. What does Alex Anthopoulos do? We've seen him win a World Series without Ronald Acuna, but now these injuries are kind of starting to pile on. Do you expect the Braves to make a bunch of moves here and really make a run? Because despite those injuries, they are going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. I see him getting a guy like, say, Zach Eflin. He can replace Charlie Morton next year. He's got $18 million on his contract in 2025. I think it's a perfect guy, and then they take their chances in the postseason. Yeah, really banged up with the injuries, but Anthopoulos is such a great GM, so they're deep. They'll be able to withstand these things. But yeah, I don't think they'd be real aggressive. I could see getting a guy like an Eflin or a Eric Fetty, something like that.
Bob, I think the St. Louis Cardinals are another intriguing team. Playoffs started today, they'd be in. I still think they can make a run at the division. I'm not fully sold on Milwaukee yet, but the Brewers have been very formidable this year, certainly in the face of a depleted rotation. St. Louis feels like another team that'll be adding at the deadline, though.
Yeah, I could see them getting an Eric Fetty or Zach Eflin. I could see one of those two guys coming. They need their starter. And, hey, you know, with the way Sonny Gray's pitching and stuff, veteran guys, they got a chance to surprise some in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think it'd be very disappointing if they don't come up with at least one more starter.
So, Bob, obviously we live in the betting world. If Bob Nightingale were to bet one bat, one starter gets moved, who is the bat, who is the starting pitcher you expect to be on a new team post-deadline?
Well, sort of Crochet. So Crochet, you know, I'll go as a top starter being moved. Top bat, I may go the same team. I may go Luis Robert Jr.
Wow.
Alonso's not going anywhere. I can't see any other, big stud position player. So, yeah, I would go Robert. You know, I think Josh Chisholm we moved too. They finally got a market for him. But Robert's a better player, of course, than Josh Chisholm.
And Robert's 26 years old, plays a premium position, speed, power combination. Who has the return that Chicago would need to give up on Luis Robert here? Like, who do you think the market is? The Dodgers? Who else?
I'd say, yeah, Dodgers. You still have the Yankees involved. They could use another outfielder. Certainly Philadelphia. Don't rule Philadelphia out. They could use a right-handed bat for sure.
All right, Bob, before I let you go, season ends today. Just hypothetically speaking, who are the teams that you would foresee playing each other in the World Series?
You know, before the season started, I thought Baltimore and Atlanta. I'll change it now to Baltimore and Philadelphia. Philadelphia is pitching great. They certainly have the bats. I can't see them going through the tailspin like they did last year against the Diamondbacks. And Baltimore's got all the young talent in the world. So I'll go Baltimore, Philly.
I love it. I've got the Orioles to win the division. I think they're better than the Yankees. And I think Philly, they've learned a lot the last couple of years. And I think they are prime to win it all. Great stuff, Bob Nightingale, USA Today, baseball columnist and insider. Follow him on X at B Nightingale. Appreciate the time, pal.
Sure. Take care, guys. Bye.
Good stuff from Bob there. Phillies, to me, again, I'll give you something maybe tomorrow. I'll give you a crazy cross-sport futures parlay that involves the Phillies that's like over 200-1. I love this Philly team. Maybe we'll unpack that on the other side.
Yeah,
huh?
I've got them plus 280 to win the East.
I like it.
And look, this is a team that's been real. Since Rob Thompson took over, they've been really close now a couple times. I'd love to see them be super aggressive here at the deadline.
It's the Florida Panthers effect. They had to watch VGK hoist the cup last year. They got back to the Stanley Cup this year. No way they were losing that series. We'll wrap up Sharp Money on the other side.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, let's do it. July's ending with a bang. UFC 304, not just one, but two. Count them, two titles on the line. Get your own crown. Jump in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC. Download the app now. Use the code VSIN. That's code VSIN. New customers get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. What an awesome show today. Having a blast filling in here on Sharp Money this week. Jared Smith in for Patrick Maher. Dustin Tweedleson slam packed show. Jake Gassman, Dan Palio, Todd Furman, Bo Brack, Adam Burke. We just got off the phone with Bob Nightingale. This is some of your best work, pal. Good stuff.
We gave you a little bit of everything. It's this time of year where it's like we've got the baseball crossing over with the college and the NFL previews. So we can hit on everything here. We're going to do it throughout the week. Actually, we do have some guests confirmed for tomorrow.
Yeah, let's go. What do we got for tomorrow? We do a little teaser.
Ted Wynn from The Athletic wrote a great piece on Jordan Love, and he's great at breaking down film. He's going to join us. Matt Sims, former quarterback, obviously in the NFL, in college, in Tennessee. He's going to check in. We'll look at the Eagles because both of us are really high with Scott Grayson, who covers the team in Philly. So those three confirmed right now. Nice. Who knows, maybe a surprise or two along the way.
There's always a surprise anytime I'm in the saddle with you, pal. It's been a fun week. Excited to finish things off tomorrow. You'll have Ben Wilson Thursday, Friday, Joe Cirillo next week before Patrick's back in the saddle here next Friday. Best bets for today. I'll give you a couple nerfies that are on my card tonight. We lost yesterday, 1-2 with our nerfies. I'll be honest, it was one of those days where I've been running hot and I knew eventually I'd get a couple bad breaks. Well, they happened yesterday. I thought if you watched the games yesterday, I gave you Cincinnati, Atlanta, Nerfy. Ellie De La Cruz, one out in the top of the first, hits a ball into the right field corner. Anyone else running, minus like Usain Bolt, is at second base there. And then the next batter ground out, the next batter fly ball ends the inning. It was Ellie De La Cruz. So he got to third. Fly ball to the outfield, which was pretty shallow fly ball to the outfield. I think he's the only guy that not only gets the third, but also scores on that sack fly. That was the only run in the inning. The Reds got a couple more runs later on in the game, but very low scoring game, Cincinnati, Atlanta. Unfortunate not to hit the Nerfy there. We got you the Nerfy, Pittsburgh, St. Louis. And then, man, late night, I thought we were home going to the bottom of the first in Seattle. We got a hit by pitch in the bottom of the first inning, then an infield single, which then led to a ground ball and a sack fly, or may have been a single. I don't know. I lost track. Either way, the infield single really screwed us there. We probably should have went 2-1 yesterday. We went 1-2. We'll try better tonight. I'm on the Nerfy in Texas. We talked about this game, White Sox Rangers. I'm obviously concerned about John Gray, hopefully not 50 Shades of Gray on the other side. Whoa. But I feel very good about Garrett Crochet. He was 19-1 in the Nerfy this year. Are you kidding me? 45% strikeout rate in the first inning. This dude is absolutely dominant. I will say this about John Gray. He hasn't started a game in 2 weeks. He started his last game before the break on July 8th. He pitched one inning of relief and a blowout against the Orioles on Friday, and I'm guessing that was just a bullpen session. But he is very well rested, basically hasn't started a game in 2 weeks. Hopefully that means his first inning is fresh and clean. So we'll go Texas, Chicago, White Sox, Nerfy. The other one, I'm going right back to Seattle tonight. Jose Soriano scares the bejesus out of me, but he's not facing J.P. Crawford tonight, who got banged in the first inning on his finger, fractured pinky on the IL. I was not going to play this because it's juicy. Look at that total. It's like 7. Almost juiced to the under. That is a really low total. But the reason I wasn't going to play this because I just don't trust Jose Soriano on the road at Seattle. He's faced the Mariners twice this year, both times. Crawford's led off the game with either a single or an extra base hit. Both times Crawford has scored. Well, Crawford's not in the lineup tonight. I feel better about Jose Soriano in the bottom of the first inning against Seattle, and I feel really good about Logan Gilbert in the top of the first against that Angels offense. So I'm laying the juice. I laid 35 cents at MGM earlier. You're probably going to have to lay 45 or 50 if you want to play this one now. Maybe parlay them both together. You get some nice plus money. We're going to have to go 2-0 anyways in order for us to win because both bets are on the minus side of the ledger. Rangers, White Sox, Nerfy, Mariners, Angels, Nerfy, my two best bets for tonight.
Yes, Daddy. He's the father of first innings. That's what he does. Look, I don't love the board today, and I think it's because of the aces going. Sure. I did just put together, while you were speaking, a three-leg not-to-record-a-win parlay.
Oh, I like this.
Will they record? So this is my thing I was doing before I went on vacation. I would take, because you and I had a conversation a while back when you were filling in for Tim Murray on Primetime, and we were talking about betting the win props. So much has to go right for a pitcher to record a win.
I hate the win props.
So you have to go 5 innings. You have to leave with a lead, and your bullpen has to hold said lead.
You're basically betting a money line.
So
a lot of things have to take place for you to hit that bet.
Here's what I've liked. I've done well with it. Everyone, Steve Fezzik crushed me. He was so angry at me for betting this. He says, just lay the $5 with someone. I'm not laying $5, guys. It's not happening. So I took Lance Lynn against Paul Skenes. No Lynn to record a win. Simeon Wood Richardson from Minnesota, not to record a win. Jose Soriano against the Mariners, not to record a win. That parlay pays minus 119. I could have added one more leg at plus money, but Chris Sale wasn't available here. So we're going to do that pays minus 119. I'm also going
to
bet.
What's Luis Gil not to record a win tonight?
Well, he's a favorite, so you probably get a good price on that.
What's Crochet not to record a win?
It was not listed. So that's the problem with this win prop.
Yeah.
A lot of these books will not post.
I would go Luis Gil. I know you're down on the Mets tonight, but the last start against the Mets was really bad. He didn't even make it to the fifth.
But I am concerned about that extra rest that
you
talked about.
The rest is certainly better.
We need to get back into the routine, and things will start to normalize here.
Sure.
I'm also going to back the Phillies minus 145. I like Zach Wheeler. I think Zach Wheeler, his home road splits, when people just look at them on the surface, they go, oh, no, he's been really bad on the road. No. On June 16th, he allowed 8 earned runs and 4 1/3 at Baltimore. That has messed up his numbers. And he had a bad start against Miami as well. But we're talking about a couple outliers and what has been a really good season for him. I think Zach Wheeler at minus 145 is a discount today. So those are the two bets for me.
I'm with you there. I think I'm torn on the Skeens prop. I've got 18-1 on him to win the Cy. If he gets to 8 strikeouts,
number.
I know it really was. I bet it in the middle of his no-hitter start while MGM was really slow to move. I wouldn't bet his Cy Young prop now. I would just bet all it's on his strikeouts, because I think that's a little bit more return on investment a little bit sooner. I don't think 4-1's worth it. I need to see more with Sale and Wheeler. If Wheeler and Sale go out and shove tonight, if Sale gets to 200 innings at this level, I don't think there's anything Skeens can do to upend him. I think they're going to need. Now, to be fair, Wheeler missed his last start before the break, and he got pushed back here. I think that's the Phillies trying to massage his workload. I wouldn't be shocked if they skipped a couple starts, because you also have to look at it through the eyes of these teams. You've got Chris Sale and Zach Wheeler. The correlation to the Phillies and the Braves' success of winning the World Series is tied so much to those two guys, whereas that's not the case with Pittsburgh. I think the Pirates will push Skeens as far as he could humanly be pushed until he says no. I don't think there's a drop-off period where it's like, hey, we're going to shut you down at this number. I think he is the exception to the rule, but I still think Sale and Wheeler, because of the innings, I mean, they basically pitched twice as many innings as Skeens has this year. Not quite that much, but just a little bit less than that. It's going to be really tough for Skeens to catch those guys, unless all of a sudden 200 innings for Chris Sale and Zach Wheeler. Maybe they miss a start, they get pushed back, they want to push them, get them fresh for the playoffs. Now all of a sudden it's like 180, 175, and Skeens gets to 140, 135. That's when I think there's an argument. And I think we could get there because, again, team success for the Braves and the Phillies matters way more to Wheeler and Sale.
Absolutely. They have to be really careful because they have higher aspirations here. There's a lot more on the line. Now, here's the thing I'll say about Zach Wheeler. And by the way, been dead wrong about the Paul Skeens thing, thinking he was going to get shut down.
Me too, until about 2 weeks ago.
And now I'm in the camp where I'm like, you know what? He's just going to keep going because he's a different breed.
Yes.
However, Zach Wheeler's been through this before. He is a horse, and when you look at his numbers, he actually has a better second-half ERA for his career at 3 versus 3.67 in the first half. Also, his best months as a pitcher are September, October, August, and July. He is much better ERA-wise when it comes to the second half of the season.
That's a good point.
So this is a guy who's able to get stronger as the season goes on. I would back him in this spot, but obviously you can't bet it at the number it's at now. I just wouldn't do that.
No, I think the NL Cy Young market's priced right. And then we'll see. It'll be awesome if these guys stay lined up. It won't happen, but it'll be awesome if they are. At least for a couple weeks, it would be cool if we get them all pitching on the same night, because that market will move. It will move. If Wheeler and Sale are average tonight and Skeens takes a no-hitter into the sixth, he might be the favorite by tomorrow.
Also, I didn't bring this up till we had less than a minute left. Trust Circle, I placed a really dumb bet, but it's not the dumbest bet I ever placed last night after he hit 2 home runs for the Mets. Francisco Lindor 60-1 NL MVP.
No shot.
I crushed the guy his whole career.
No shot.
There's a chance he goes 30-30, 100-100.
No shot.
With an 8 OPS at shortstop with a gold glove defense.
Look at the Mets. You can't see it because the graphic's on it. Take that graphic down. Look at the Mets logo on his. There you go. There it is. Awesome stuff. Dustin Sweetelson, everyone in the back, our entire list of guests. You guys are fantastic. Yeah, zoom in on the Mets logo. Look at that Reese's Senior Bowl, too. That is an impressive Valdosta State, New York Knicks. A lot of orange on that laptop. We'll see if we can get some green in your bank accounts tonight on Sharp Money. VSiN Primetime next. JVT, Tim Murray.